Okay. We did this up where we got up to.
Where are we with Paige?
You know where we got up to?
I don't know, sorry.
Revol b'simcha.
Ah, the four elements.
You finished that. I finished that.
So where were we, Andrew?
Rashi says he was ugly to Avodah Zarah, right?
Is this molder ink?
You're doing a rash in the tank then.
No, it's mold.
It's not mold.
It's not mold. This is really good.
Okay.
And the first couple pages.
That's not. Did you ever listen to your Shiro again?
Yeah.
Is it first time?
Well, it's not first time, but it happened.
I'm recording a recording right now. This is very weird.
Okay, starting guys. 1, 2, 3. Bananas. Okay, we're doing it. Okay. Alright, today's Shiro is Revolbi. It's the 16th parak. It's on Emunah. Revolbi says as follows: Anachnu makirim et HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We recognize the HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitoch shlosh hidgaliot, through three revelations. Which three revelations? Briyas HaOlam, the creation of the world; Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah; Vagula Achrona, and the final Geula. Right?
We're not there yet, right?
No. Well, we were close. We're close. After we had all the wafers today, we're close. The wafers are the plastic plate.
How many wafers did you have?
One half.
I had two. Well,
I'm not dead yet, so I'm good.
Let's go back. I'm going to lie down a little bit. The Briyas HaOlam, in the creation of the world, he revealed himself through his actions. I through the world, through the creation of the world, through his actions in the world. That's why the concept of an uman is a craftsman, right? So an uman is someone who creates an object. And why is it called an uman? Because when you see an object, a carved object or a designed object, you recognize the uman. You recognize the person who created it. And that recognition is a concept of emunah. That's why it's the same lashon. You see the creator behind his creation. So the more intricate that creation is, the more detailed that creation is, right? The more complicated that creation is, the bigger is the umness, the bigger is the craftsmanship of the person who created it. So if you have such a vast world, and such a creation, such details, and such complexity, and yet such simplicity in the world, right? The fundamentals of the world are very simple, you know, basic fundamentals, very simple. So when a person sees all that complexity and it's a simplicity, it shows a very, very complicated, very, very complicated yet simple creator. Yeah? Yeah.
But is that to say that the world was created like a table and then that was it? And there's nothing?
Not necessarily. Spreshi doesn't talk about how the world was created. It's not interested in that. It's not interested in your physics. It's interested in your metaphysics. You have to relate to your creator. Yeah?
I don't see how that's the component of the Muna. I mean, you look at the world, it seems like a logical process. You say, okay, I see this problem. That's happening from a source because it's so detailed. And
it's not so obvious.
And how you don't believe that?
Most of the world believes in a
God. No, they don't.
No, they don't.
Yeah,
I think so.
Most of the world.
They don't.
Yeah.
Saying
Google
it.
Google it. Google it.
Saying
it.
Google
it. How many people in the world? What percentage of the people in the world?
Are we talking about idiots? Or are we talking about what nation?
No.
Just
80% of people.
80% of people in the United States.
They don't believe in Hashem. They believe there's a God, though.
Yeah, but.
Do with the world. How many people in the world believe in God?
It's not dominantly atheist. It's not. But there are a lot of people that don't.
I mean, a lot of Arabs believe in God. A lot of Christians.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see, but...
It's really, like, people in L.A. and New York that really don't.
Really, the dead people?
Probably, yeah, the urban people that...
Roughly half, it's roughly half and half.
50% of people don't believe in God.
Yeah,
but Google isn't that. How do you say that? 7 billion people in the world?
A global poll by Reuters about 2012. Tens of thousands of people were inducted. Like, you're not going to get a million people surveyed. Like, give me a break. It's like, this is like tens of thousands of people.
The entire Middle East, except for Tel Aviv, believes in God.
Yeah. 80% of people in
Russia
believes
in God.
And then
don't?
Like, you another one that says 80% press they have a faith, but only 50% say they for sure believe in God. So they're like faith, but like, I'm Christian in the sense of like, we do like the holidays and whatever. Like, they don't actually believe
in
you ask.
Okay, so us in America, how many people believe in God?
So you're not going to get that statistic. You don't know.
I don't believe that.
Everything.
Yeah, Google that.
This is why we need
Mashkiach. I don't even believe.
I don't believe Google.
Huh?
But I believe
you don't
have to. It's a nice slogan.
Okay.
70% of Americans believe in a personal God.
That's pretty high.
What does that mean, personal
God? Personal means interaction with your life. That's pretty high.
So it's about 1 in 4, 25% of Americans are... For sure, do not believe in God. They're like atheist.
Something about emotional issues,
or ego issues.
And then, but it says that most Americans are disconnected from religion, but believe in God, so they don't. They just believe in like whatever version they want to believe in. They
That's still good. That's pretty high, 75%. Pretty high. How many people in China believe in God?
Not that many.
China's not a religion.
They have the state thing, which is just like the trees and like Confucianism and stuff like that. They don't have, their concept of religion is not like, it's not organized. Like so their sense of spirituality is not.
It's a secular country.
They have no religion. Religion is not allowed in China.
Yeah, but they people still practice.
Because of communism.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to practice.
It's not good, it's because of power.
Even today?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, you're not allowed to be Jewish and be a Chinese citizen.
But you're not, actually?
Yeah.
No. No wonder there's so many economic problems. No, I understand it. Because there'd be Jews, I'm surprised Jews don't live there. But Jews live there, Chabad's there.
Yeah.
They're not Chinese citizens.
Oh.
The Shabbos Goy was actually wanting to convert, and the Chabad rabbi was telling me he wasn't sure what to do. Because it's very legal for him to convert someone, and he might get shut down. But he wants to convert. He said he's genuine. I don't know what happened.
Renounce his citizenship.
Yeah. I'm American. Okay, let's go. Maybe you can't renounce. Alright, let's go weiter.
Weiter.
Yeah. Weiter.
That wasn't that bad.
Ki. Bebriya anu ro'im et chochmato ve'et chasdo. In the creation, we see his wisdom and his chesed. Right? So wisdom we can understand. What's his chesed we can see? We're breathing.
Life.
We have our needs. We have water. We have all the trees. We can cut them down, use their wood. All the ground. We can get our oil. We get our. There's a tremendous amount of supplies for us, for our needs in the world. There's more supplies in the world than we'll need for I don't know how long. Right?
20 years.
And you know, if you start talking about mining the moon and mining Mars, you know, you've got a lot more. Yeah?
Depends what spots.
Yeah? I've got a little bit.
So you're saying, like,
sulfur.
Because, like, there's a basic scientific theory, like, from order comes chaos, right?
Entropy.
Like, yeah, but our world is not like that.
That's a different question. You're asking a different question.
But it's
you're
like
asking,
gratitude toward the order.
Yeah, you're asking a different question. You're asking a very important question that I also hold as a proof of God. The only place where you don't see, I mean, you do see, I mean, ultimately you dispose of things, but a human being, you see there's order. It doesn't defy entropy, but, you know, like, we make enough disorder, but the human being himself is a place of order. So defy it, it can't be just the laws of entropy. It can't just be, you know, a regular system. Anyway, that doesn't matter. Like, if you write something, you're creating order. I don't know if animals create order. I think they do also.
Yeah.
Okay, they make nests.
Ants,
you
know, the most
ordered. Yeah. So, like, life is... I don't think it goes against entropy in general. But, like, the specific thing, the specific animal, the specific entity goes against the laws of entropy. Not, doesn't go against it, because in general there's a chaos. Right? Our refuge is more chaos than probably the order we make in the world. I don't know exactly. I don't know. Never thought too much on that. But you're right. That's a problem.
We should have a shiur on that. It's a very interesting topic.
No, I got later.
Yeah, no, not today. I'm saying.
Okay.
What's
yours? Put on your list.
No. That's after.
Oh, are we?
Philip. Okay. Aval hu yitbarach atzmo nista v'ne'elam. Right? It means his world is revealed, but he is hidden away from us. B'chazo, even so, dai bitvoranut, if we deeply think, b'toch ha'briyah, through the creation, kedei lagia le'emunah, to this belief, u'lemadregot elyonah b'avodat Hashem, and to the higher levels of avodat Hashem. That means, a person has a certain one way of emunah. What's this way of emunah? He can look around him, and he can see the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in his life, in the world, and he can see the craftsmanship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world, and how that all comes together. And as much as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is hidden from him, but he's revealed to him in the world. I.e. the world is a revelation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's umnus, his craftsmanship. And through an understanding of the world, an understanding of that craftsmanship, a person get a yediyah, an understanding, and therefore an emunah of a Kodesh Baruch Hu in his world. Because there he's revealed. And through that, he can get to different levels in the Avodas Hashem. So in theory, a person who's a very good scientist or biologist, or whatever he is, right? Or even he's learning, you know, the laws of the ants. I don't know, whatever he's learning, right? Or he's learning how an eye works. Or he wants to replicate the eye. He's learning neuroscience. Whatever he's learning. In theory, that could be an Avodas Hashem. Because through his study, he sees the details and the beauty of the world. And he sees the craftsman who made this. And he comes to a very deep emunah. Okay? And also that's what people do, right? Generally speaking, the apikorsim, or the atheists, because they don't learn it in a certain way. Like, you have people who learn Talmud. Doesn't make them more front. You know, in Korea, everyone learns Talmud, right? Why are they learning it for? To become good businessmen. Yeah, the Korean degree came. How many Gairim came from Korea after the whole country is like officially learning Talmud?
None.
I would be a businessman. Right? You understand? Depends how you learn it. Depends how you do it. So, our avoda is, whatever we're doing, when we're seeing the world, is to turn that into recognition of a Kodesh Baruch Hu in the world. So when we see something deep, we begin to see the depth to the world. And that debt is a revelation of Kodesh Baruch Hu. Okay, that's what we're saying here. Clear?
You're not just talking about the physical world.
No, it could be the metaphysical world. If we're living terror, but that's going to be a different form. That's a much higher level.
What I mean is, like, how the scientific world is structured versus, like, how a series of events unfolds in your life.
Listen, when I was a kid, no, that's more personal than Muna. We're talking about seeing Kodesh Baruch Hu in the world. When I was younger, like, you know, much younger, I was 15, I sometimes, you know, I used to, you know, like when I studied science, I used to, like, sometimes not cry, but I used to, like, not cry like crying out of, like, you know, frustration, crying out of, I couldn't believe how such simple ideas are so, you know, explain everything. Physics, what astounded me about physics, is the ideas are very simple. Very, very simple ideas. And with those such simple ideas, you can do so much. You just take Newtonian mechanics, right? Newtonian mechanics, you can actually work it out. It's not so hard. You can actually work it out. You know, invariance of momentum, invariance of like in time, right? Like the world is the same laws of nature if you go back or forward in time. Or you go of a moving object or a non-moving object. The same. The laws of nature are the same, right? If you put in the speed of light, you get special relativity. But you can work out all the laws of nature. Mm-hmm. Even quantum mechanics. I want to tell you something. If you really want to know, even quantum mechanics is very simple. After Feynman, quantum mechanics is very simple. All quantum mechanics says is that you've heard of least action?
What?
Least action. You know what least action is? You don't know.
Obviously the least amount of work to get somewhere.
Yeah, like the least amount of work to get to a certain place, right? So, what would you expect an object to do? Right? You're an object, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have inertia, right? If you have inertia, what's it going to do? You're going to go the easiest way to get to a certain place, right? So, all of Newton's laws, or any laws, you can say, if you work out the action of a system, right? The action of a system, which is basically the potential, the kinetic energy minus the potential energy. Basically, that means to minimize the amount within a certain potential energy, to minimize the amount of energy in the system. That's the least action, right? Going on a trajectory. So if you do that, you get Newton's laws, right? Mm-hmm. Quantum mechanics, what it says is, a particle doesn't move in one trajectory. It moves in all sorts of different trajectories and go in all sorts of different. If you know, if you're asking, what's the probability of going from here to here? What do? You take all the trajectories, you sum up all the trajectories, and you have a weight on each of those trajectories. The weight of each of those trajectories is proportional to the action of that trajectory, right? Right? It's proportional to the action of that trajectory. And then you work out the probability of a particle going from here to here. In general, it's around the Newtonian trajectory. Those over here and those over here are very negligible and they cancel each other out. And basically it's around here. That's quantum mechanics. That's it, basically. It's the same idea. And you actually prove it. You actually prove it in quantum mechanics. Okay, but it's and then after that, all of the laws of nature are just about invariance. Invariance in terms of quantum mechanics and invariance in terms of physics or general relativity. The rest is just maths. That means with such simple ideas, you can work out all of the reality of the world. That's unbelievable. It means the silicon chips, everything, your computer, the buildings, the bridges you go on. When did it start getting complicated?
When you reach the speed of light.
No. When it gets complicated is when you start talking about life. Life, no one understands. Once you start talking about life, physics stops.
Human life or life?
Any life. You can't physically understand life. Life is not something to be physically understood.
Like the progression, like the development of life.
Not even development, just life. Behavior. How, why is it? How, what, life. You can't quantitize it. Quantum mechanics can't explain life. It can only explain particle. It can't explain why an atom, how, you know, all the atoms in an ant become an ant and walks around and does whatever it does. A human being. It can't explain a human being. Human being is beyond. Even is beyond the realm of quantum mechanics. You know that there is a physical world. Life is something non-physical. It's a different realm. That itself is an amazing thing. That itself tells you something. So you straight away understand that there's laws for the physical, and there's laws you call life metaphysical, but metaphysical. That's an amazing thing. As soon as you begin to think that, as soon as you realize that, just as that's what made me in a sense from, because I realized that the laws of nature are simple, really, and the rest is just maths. But you know, like, human beings are pretty complicated, right? And I don't understand them. He says, it must be, there must be laws about human beings. I mean, there's laws about the physical world. There must be laws about human beings. There must be, like, some sort of program, some sort of way human beings work. How do human beings work? Like, we all think the same, we all eat the same food, we all look the same, and we're different a little bit, but there's so much similar about us. You know, biology speaks about the biology of a human being. You know, when you talk about the development of a heart, it's everyone's heart. Okay, so you have different blood types, you have different this, but it's categorized, right? It can be categorized. You have different elements, but it's categorized. It's categorized with, you have DNA, but they're beginning to understand the DNA, just like beginning to understand the atom, right? The atomic, what's it called, the table, right? That was a big thing in physics. They're beginning to understand the DNA. They're going to be able to classify different types of human beings. Mm-hmm. Soon they're going to be able to classify the mind, how people think, how, what sleep is, what this is. It's just a question of time, but they're going to do it. They have now technology, they're going to do it, right? And wait till computers get more sophisticated. They're going to be able to do, they're going to be able to model, I don't know what they're going to model, right? So once you have that, once you can classify things, once you can understand things, even on a physical level, you have to understand that there must be some sort of laws that govern humanity that make sense for all human beings. Because it doesn't make sense to have all these people around and there's no law which classifies them or understands them in general. And then the details of that understanding will understand them in particular, right? So that made me think about it. That made me look to understand, what laws are there about human beings? What is all human beings want in life? There must be desires. There must be things. I have a desire. What are my desires? What am I looking for? What are you looking for? Right? And then you, all of a sudden, you open up books and you see that people, generally speaking, are speaking about the same things. Right? There's a classification. It doesn't matter what religion. Every religion, doesn't matter which religion you pick up. This is like some stupid religion, right? Which there are.
Spaghetti monster religion.
Right, it doesn't matter. Huh? But anything normal, the most normal religions that you have, the people who are the righteous or the proper people, like that, however you want to call them, in any religion, are the giving people. The classification of a good person, right, in any religion is a giver. In even in psychologists, you know, like Froom speaks about it, that you have different personality types. And he goes through all the personality types from the Greeks, and he shows you that all the classifications of personality types, right, are basically the same. And then he goes and tells you what makes your personality into good personality or the bad personality. What? Giving. So now you just worked out something. You worked out something very, very fundamental. That the shorish of a person, the source of a person, is to give. Right? That's what makes a person. You with me? Why? Why is that the foundation of a human being, to give? Why?
That's what Creator does. To be like Him, to be godly, we have to do the same thing.
That for me was like, oh! So if a human being is going to be a giver, why is that fundamental about every single human being, every single religion, everything in reality is giving? That means somehow intrinsic to us is this spiritual concept called giving. I mean, really, I'm not talking about giving for the purpose of taking. I mean, giving, right? Giving of yourself. You give to your kids, you give to your wife gives to your kids, right? There's a certain innate thing, and the people that you respect are those who are the givers. Those who are giving for themselves, who are giving of their lives. The heroes gave their lives up for mankind, for whatever they did. Or this person, you know, he worked so hard to get to the moon, right? Okay. Or he worked so hard to get to Everest, right? Or he worked so hard at the Super Bowl. Whatever it is. You admire those people who, like, went out and gave themselves to the world. Whatever it was, I'm not saying the Super Bowl, right? But you understand what I'm saying? Why is that? Why? Every religion would agree with that. They might disagree what's called giving. Or, you know, if you're Christian, the biggest giving is make someone else a Christian. I don't know what they might think, right? But they all agree the fundamental. So it comes down to it, that why am I this way? There must be a reason. Right? Because God is about who created the world. The earth was a reason for creating the world. To give to the world, i.e. intrinsic to the world, is this concept of giving. Because when you create something with a concept, that's the concept in the world. So if the creation of the world was an action of giving, that's the purpose of the world. That's the purpose of the whole thing here. You with me? You understand? It's a very simple idea. Now, what's left to do? Go learn. Who said this Klal Gadol? Let me go read Judaism. What did it say? Klal Gadol b'Torah. What's Klal Gadol b'Torah? The biggest rule in the Torah. What's the biggest rule in the Torah?
Learn Torah.
V'ahavta l'recha kamocha. Love your neighbors. You say, what's loving your neighbors yourself? It means giving. It says there's a nuance here. So Rashi says, Re'echa is also a Greek baruch. Re'echa is also yourself. Re'echa is also your fellow man. Now see what that word said. Re'echa is yourself. Give to yourself. Re'echa is baruch. And Re'echa is your fellow man. What are those? Three aspects of self. God, man, to his fellow man, and man to himself. It's all written in that statement. You with me? So Judaism added a nuance that there's three aspects to giving. Man and himself, man and his creator, and man and his fellow man. That's all aspects of man. But it's all fundamental to giving. You with me? So now you know the whole of Torah. That's what Judaism says. That's the whole of Torah. And that makes sense. That's what makes sense. Anyone who's a thinking person, that makes sense. Now if you've got someone who told you something that makes so much sense, the fundamental of all creation, right? And it says that, and you understood it from Svara. This is something you can understand from Svara. It's not something you need to learn from Torah to understand that. You can understand that just so you can learn physics, right? So now you know the fundamentals of reality. Now go learn. You with me? So like, that's what Emunah is. Emunah is when you realize the basis of what you're living for and it makes sense to you. It's not something, I'm not keeping Judaism because I like the schnitzel, right? Or the cholent on Shabbos. That's not what I'm about. Or I became frum because the rabbi loved me up. Right? I am religious because that makes sense. You say when you're a religious physicist, you're a religious Jew because it makes sense. This world, the only way it makes sense is if... And everyone, I want to tell you something. No one in the world disagrees with this. No one in the world. We might disagree with what's called giving. But no one disagrees. No one, I mean, talking about normal people, not about, you know, like the crazy people, talking about people you would call normal. No one disagrees with this concept. So that means we have a fundamental here. And we understand this fundamental. Now what's the rest of life about? To work that out. To work out. Who am I? What am I? Specifically. Like, now we know the rules of humanity. Now that I know the rules of humanity, what do you do in physics? Now you've worked out that everything's a string. What do you want to do now? Now you've worked it all out. You know everything works with quantum mechanics. You know this is a particle, this is a string, whatever it is. Now what do you want to do? You want to take this fundamental idea and work out how it applies to an electron, how it applies to a proton, how it applies to a muon, how it applies to this, how they apply to everyone. So now you want to know the mechanism of humanity. How it applies to specific you. Now, you can study another human being. That's called psychology. So you can learn a bit of psychology, right? And statistics and whatever. But you can also, there's an amazing thing here. You can study yourself. You can be aware of yourself. You can understand who you are. Understanding who you are is the whole of reality. There's no bigger emunah. Now I want to tell you another thing. Understanding yourself, you will find, right, the depths of self. Understanding the depths of self is also understanding the world. It's also understanding the Creator. And that's what emunah is. Emunah isn't to believe. Emunah is das. You with me? An understanding of the world, and the world makes sense to you. That's what emunah is. That's what he's saying here, evolving. You understand what I'm saying? From the creation, you can understand everything. And it's all related. I mean, someone asks you why you're from Jew. What answer are you going to give? When it says, Da lanot lapikoris, you should know how to answer an apikoris. Yeah? Why do you don't know where it's on, apikoris? Let him go rot in hell. Who cares about him? Why have to know? It's for you. It's for you. You have to know to answer yourself. You have to work out what you're living for. That's emunah. Emunah isn't I believe in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. We're not Christians here. I believe in Yoshki pancakes. No. That's not emunah. Emunah is to understand clearly why all this makes sense.
What's the difference between emunah and das?
It's the same. When you have das, you have emunah. When you understand what you're living for, when it makes sense to you, that's emunah. Emunah is the jump. Das is the glowing. Nas, it's like nas even ishma.
Mm-hmm.
The jump is emunah, but you have the das to come with that jump.
So the emunah is
like,
part
I'm going to keep Shabbos. Why? Because I went to Rabbi's house for Shabbos and it was really nice. The child was great. I liked the family. It was nice. I think you have to have a day off. Once a year to get off work. Right? That's what we start off with. Right? That's Shabbos. Baloney, that Shabbos. That's not Shabbos. Shabbos is Neshama Yetera. Shabbos, you get a Ksarim back. Shabbos is a whole world is Shabbos. It's Me'ein Olam Haba. Now, I started a little bit. I'm experiencing it a little bit. That's the Naseh. Now I need to understand it. What's the purpose of being in Yeshiva? It's to build your emunah. It's to build your emunah. To build your understanding of reality. Do you not? You say, oh, I'm going to be a frum Jew. So, you know, be a frum Jew. Let's go through Kitzei Hilchos Shabbos, Kitzei Hilchos everything, right? 2 weeks, we can have it done. Crash course, right? We can give you all the shilas about which what broccoli you make on the bread at night. All those things, right? You ask every day. Get a quick crash course and finish it, right? You don't need to like get in and what's it called, you know, how you give a get, what's writing, what's not writing. What do you learn that for? Crash course, boom. That's not, we're not teaching you how to be a Jew. That's not yeshiva. We're teaching you how to think. Gemara's teaching you how to think a Jewish way. To be creative in your thinking, to work out your life. Because the purpose of life is to work it out and understand it. And that understanding is emunah. That's why Talmud Torah is such a fundamental mitzvah in Judaism. Because the more you understand, the greater is your connection. On your level, whatever your level of understanding is. You with me? It makes sense to you?
As far as learning or in general?
In general.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding the world, there should be nothing in the world that you don't want to understand. You know, I should read you, if you have it, the thing is very important, the Chazanish. I did it with you once. Maybe for,
no, you did.
I did it.
I remember you did Chazanish.
I did it when I first came to Yeshua. You guys, they asked me to share here to all of you guys. And anyway, Chazanish says, let me see here, Chazanish. It's Emunah B'Bitochen, Sefer Emunah B'Bitochen. Has it? We have a Chazanish here.
Do you want me to go get it?
You know where it is?
I can try to find it.
Let's have a look. I don't think we have an issue. Send it quick. You with me, guys? You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just tell you the Chazanish outside. I don't see a Chazanish here. So Chazanish says that man's existential crisis, so to speak, right? Those are the words he uses, but that's like a gist of what he's saying. Man's existential crisis is understanding this world. and that it bothers him, and that his non-understanding, his desire to understand is such a desire that he's mit'alef. He's like, he's constantly trying to understand, and he's like, the non-understanding is so traumatic to him that he's like, he's just involved in that understanding the whole time. And if you know anything about the Gedolim, right? They're always thinking Torah. They're always thinking ideas. They're always in process. That's emunah. When you have that process in your mind, when you're, you understand what I'm saying? When you're thinking all the time of what I'm living for, what does this mean? What's happening to you in your life, right? When this happened to you or that happened to you, you're thinking it. That process of thinking constantly about your life and internalizing and trying to understand the depth of life, that's emunah. You with me? That's what he's saying here. Okay? Cool.
So we say that the, like a, it's impossible to completely understand Hashem, right? But would we say the same thing about self? Would we say that it's impossible?
Same thing. Understanding self is understanding your neshama. Your neshama is too high up for you to fully understand. The connection in the neshama to the goof is the same. Understanding that is like understanding what involves connection to the world. We can't fully understand ourselves. We can only approximate to understand, and that's our whole life. And the more we understand of our neshama, in the sense, it's more with us. When you understand something, when I understand something, when I've read something, I read a book and understand it, what happens to me? What does it mean to understand something? It means, it becomes part of me. When it becomes part of me, I have dominion over it. Understanding the Shah means you have dominion over it. It means part of you. Understanding Kodesh Baruch Hu, you can't have dominion over Kodesh Baruch Hu, therefore you can't fully understand. But what you understand is integral to your living. You understand? So long as you live with that understanding, that's a different challenge. Understanding is one thing, and living with the understanding is another thing. But the real living with the understanding is real emunah. Understanding is an important part. There has to be a living with the understanding, or it's not terror. You with me? Make sense?
So, kind of, you're saying the purpose of life is to understand something that you can't ever fully understand. So how do you live with that paradox?
If you didn't have it...
It sounds like you have to emphasize the process versus the destination.
Yeah, life is that process. Emunah is a process. Emunah isn't a destination. You understand?
That's like a framework shift.
Yeah.
American mindset.
Yeah. It's not about how much money I'm going to make. It's about how hard I'm going to work to get there.
So it's about effort, not results.
No. You can... Everyone's... Ultimately, the biggest result is the biggest effort towards the result.
But in life, your... Results matter. Results matter very much.
Yeah. The result is the effort. A tzaddik isn't... you're going to get many things in your life which are difficult, and many things in your life which are good and happy. Right? The good things are pleasant, you enjoy them. They didn't build you so much. Maybe they built because, if you use the good things to have an appreciation and a hakara of who gave it to you, then those good things will also build you a munah. Right? But the bad things, the acceptance of the bad things, is harder. I don't know which is harder. I don't know if it's harder to see something good and appreciate it, or accepting something bad and realizing it comes from your Creator and it's there to change you. I don't know which is harder. It's when we make a bracha, we just made a bracha over the food, right? We had falafel today, and it was Rosh Chodesh, and you got an extra piece of... like a wafer, right? And we all made brachas. We all said thank you to Kodesh Baruch Hu. How much do we really appreciate it that we have those things? Like, let's be honest. We don't really need the chips, right? We don't really need them. You could have had, like, much less than that. You know, a potato, you know, like a just boiled potato, half of the size would have been enough for us in terms of calories and probably even better for us, right?
We didn't need the napkins.
We didn't need the napkins. We did, definitely did the waffle, right? We didn't need even the falafels, right? You know, a bit of hummus, right? And that was it. You know what I'm saying? We could have, or a little pill for a vitamin. We didn't need all of that stuff in terms of our kiyum, you know? If we were in a Buddhist monk, right, we'd be eating rice impregnated with vitamins. That would be fine, right? And you would be able to survive on it. We don't do that. Why don't we do that?
Because we're used to it.
No, there's a reason why we don't do that. We're going to eat the food, and we're going to make a barakah. And we'll see the good HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. And that recognition of a good brings us to a level of emunah, a hakara. It says the hakara of the chesed of the Baruch Hu. When we make a bracha, that's an avodah in emunah. Who gave you that? This is revolvi here. I'm telling you revolvi, I'm just explaining it. Hakara of chesed. How you make the bracha is an avodah in emunah. How you recognize, when you say thank you to Ricky, right? Say Ricky makes you something special, right? You're gluten-free. So there was like a, you know, a thing, and Ricky made you a special thing. You thank her, right? Your needs are satisfied. She did something for you. You thank her. How do we thank a Kodesh Baruch Hu?
Gratitude.
When we're making a broch, you know, I tell you what the problem. We have this problem. This is a real problem for us. Where did we came from? So, we make a bracha. Bracha, shakodir, finished, right? We say all those words so quickly. We know what they mean because we read the art scroll. We know back and forth what it means, right? But did we think about what it means when we said it? No.
Sometimes.
Did we feel gratitude when we said it? Did we think about our Creator when we said it? So we're missing on our money. We're missing on the ikka of what it's there for. When we get up in the morning, what do we do? Thank you. Do you ever thank a Kodesh Baruch Hu being the ability to think? That's a pretty important one, right? Could you imagine if you couldn't be able to think?
No.
I can imagine it. After a few cups of wine, you can imagine it, right? You can imagine it, right? But could you imagine not being able to think? That's a big lesson that you can think. There are people in the world who don't know how to think, right? Like most, I'm sorry. There are, right? There are. You can think. What's the first bracha? Some of the first brachas we make in the morning. What's the first bracha we make in the morning?
Netilat Yadayim.
Mode ani lefanecha. Let's go through it. Mode ani. Just think the words. Mode ani. What's mode ani? I'm mode. I admit. I'm thanking. Hoda'ah. I admit. I just open my eyes. The first thing I say is thank you. What am I thanking for? Lefanecha. Who's lefanecha?
Before you.
Before you. Who's you? That's how you speak to Rabbi Gershwin. Hey, you. That's how you speak to him. Rabbi Gershwin would be saying, right? He speaks to Kodesh Baruch Hu. Who's bigger? Rabbi Gershwin or Kodesh Baruch Hu? That's the Shaila. Okay. You see what I'm saying? You're saying Lefanecha, Modani, in front of you. You, right? That means you have a personal relationship and you're thanking him for what? Now after you called him you, where do you go now?
No.
Melech, he's king. Do you really think he's king when you're saying that? Chai, an alive king. He's not a dead king, he's alive. He's king now, with you now, in front of you, right? Can you imagine him when you got up in the morning, right? Alhamdulillah, right? And this, like, you know, this Obama type guy. Or Trump, let's take Trump. It's like Trump would just, like, you'll throw water on you to wake you up. So, like, you know, Trump was already, right? But this king walked up in front of you. He's the king of the whole universe, right? Like Star Wars, the Emperor. He's standing in front of you. And he's waiting for you to get up. Melechai, the Kayam. He's there. He's Kayam. He's no moving. He's there always. Kayam. Shehezata bi, you return to me. Because where is it? When you were sleeping, what happens to you? In Shluffy land? Why are you Shluffing? Because your neshama leaves you. Part of your neshama leaves you. The higher level of your neshama leaves you. Goes floats in outer space over there, right? Okay? Melech shechzata bi nishbati. My soul. Bechemla. What's chemla?
Mercy.
Yeah, it's a form of, like, you pity a child. You pity, it's a mercy, you see potential for chemla. It's not budin, it's with rachamim. Because maybe you did stuff yesterday, and you deserve to get it back today. This pikod, but bechemla, you have potential, I'm giving it back. Rabba emunatecha. Great is your emun, is your trust in me, that I can be a servant to you, Kadosh Baruch Hu. We say that every day, right? We say it, and yet we don't say it. You with me? Can you imagine saying it if we said it, really said it in the morning? Could you imagine really saying it? What are we thanking Kadosh Baruch Hu for? The first thing we open our eyes, what are we thanking him for?
Our life.
Yeah. Our cognitive life.
Yeah.
You know, there are people, you know, who are vegetables and they're attached to this machine and they're in constant slumber. That's not much of a life, right? We're awake, we're alive, we're thinking. The first thing we ask him for, first thing we thank him for. Then what do we do after that?
Wash our hands.
Okay. Why are we washing our hands?
Get rid of the
water on our fingertips.
Okay. And what are we thanking for? We're making a brachah. Right? We got up. The neshama left us. So, your neshama leaves you. So, your goof is mainly with you. You have your nefesh. So, you're more physical. The physicality in you represents that ra. Now, when your neshama comes back to you, it removes that ra from you. So, now, what's after you got the neshama back? What's the next thing we're thanking you for? From removing that ra. He removed most of it. That neshama that he gave us, that's a present he gave us, removed most of the ra from us. What do we do? You do the Tzilis Yadayim. What do we do? The fingertips, our fingertips, this ends, which is the place, there's a reason why ends are the place of the ra, but let's not go with that now. We are the ones just finishing off the removal of that ra. That's our voda. Al, brochatashe, vashe, kiddishanu. You were kadishas, but mitzvotah v'tzivanu al netilat yadayim. What netilat yadayim mean?
Something with hands.
No. Netilat. Natla is a vessel. Netilat.
No. Please.
Look at your article. Go.
Uh-huh.
Go look at your article, what it says. He probably says the washing of your hands. It doesn't mean the tila yadayim.
Come on,
Al netila yadayim. Litol. Litol something is to take it.
No,
the taking of the hands, literally. Or the washing of the hands. What does it washing of the hands represent? The notel yadayim. We're taking charge of our hands. We're taking responsibility for actions. Our part is now that you gave us the neshama. Neshama did most of the work. We have a little bit of work to remove the rest of the ra in us. That's our job. The ends are always a place of connection. The hands, they're the place that we connect, we touch the world, we interact with the world. That world, we want to interact with it to bring it up, to be notable. Notable also means to lift up our hands. That's why we lift up our hands, to bring up the world to Kadosh Baruch Hu. You with me? That's our voda. We're thanking him that he was mekadishas with the mitzvahs, that we can bring the world, the physicality, up to Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's our avoda. Most of the avoda he did for us. And we're thanking him for that. There's a little bit of avoda, the connection of the world to our hands that we're thanking him for. You understand? If we really just listen to the brachas and the order of the brachas as we say them, the order of our tefillah, you know what emunah we would have? You know what connection we would have? That's then. If you go through all the brachas, those are the first things we speak about. Then what's the next one you speak about?
Depends.
You go to the toilet.
You go to the bathroom.
Right, you go to the bathroom. Next thing is go to the bathroom. What's going to the bathroom?
Your bodily functions are working.
Right. You're getting rid of what? All your
sodas. Your waste.
All your waste. Right? All the waste from, you know, the burgers you ate last night, right? You're getting rid of it in the morning. Right? So you're getting rid of it all. All the waste.
And then you finish up
with the means. Because Baruch Hu created you with a body that knows how to discern what's good for it and what's bad for it. And it's getting rid of it. And what's my flea la'asot? How could his Baruch Hu connect? Right. The means. We're doing a pu'ul. If you understand the pu'ul, the first pu'ul we're doing in the morning is removal of the bad from the good. The tilis yadayim, the asher yatsa. We're removing the bad. The siluk of the ra. That's the first avoda. The physical ra. Right? It's bad. It's psod. It's bad. Right? Then what do we say next one? The Shama Shatadri, Tahora.
Made it pure.
Now we're thanking from the Shama he gave back to us. Into a pure body. We removed our hands, our actions. We removed the psalm of our goof. And now we're fitting to have a Tahor the Shama in us. Because we cleansed our bodies. That's the avoda. And in a certain sense, a returning of that neshama is ke'en tchias amazing. And that's the whole avoda. The whole avoda of life is in those first few brachas. We're here to remove ourselves. The main avoda is removal from the ra. And then the Brish Baruch Hu brings us this beautiful neshama back into us. Tahora. You with me? And now what do? Now we go back with all the Birkus HaShachar. Here's maybe Machrogazi, Birkus HaTerah or Birkus HaShachar, right? So all the Birkus HaShachar. Go through the Birkus HaShachar. What we're thanking God for. And thank Him for those things. There's a recognition of what you need. All those needs are satiated. You with me, Johnny?
Yeah, I'm listening. Sorry.
You understand what I'm saying? If we just did the Birkus HaShachar in the morning properly, we reach a tremendous amount. You know, I'll tell you the truth. By the time we finish Birkas HaShachar, right, we'd be in a different world. We'd be different. If I'm Moda Ani, we get up every morning. Maybe we'll take that on. We'll take on just saying Moda Ani in the morning with Kavanah. Like I said, that we'll just say it. Thank you for actually getting up in the morning. Let's do a Moda Ani.
Do you think like this when you make your brachas in the morning?
No. If I thought like this, I wouldn't be in Kollel at 9:30 or 10. I'd be there probably 12. Right? But that's what you should do, at least one bracha. So I do certain brachas, I do like that.
Do you mean slowly?
Yeah, I try. I'll be honest. With me, the brachas in the morning, they're going to be quick because it's getting to shul. But there's one place that I have time. The one place that everyone has time, and you have time, is Shemona Esra. Because Shemona Esra is Chazar Sashatz, which is a big bracha. Right? If they didn't invent Chazar Sashatz, we'd be in a big problem, because we'd be finishing our Shemona Esra quickly for the Shlitzi with the next day Ashrei, right? So you have a big bracha called Chazar Sashatz. So it means you have twice, or at least 1.5 times the amount of time that people normally daven in Shemona Esra. Right? If you go to decent minyan, right? You can be married in Yishmona Esrei. That's the place you can make your brachas. Take your time. Think about the brachas. Now, we didn't speak about that. So that's a place where you have time. That's a place where I try and daven properly. When it's Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, I try and do all my daven properly. You have 4 hours of davening. In 4 hours, like, what am I going to do? I'm going to, like, you know, play video games. I'm going to daven. But normal, in normal life, we have a problem. It's called
children.
No, not children. It's called I mean, children, hell, but it's not the children. It's just how life is. We know davening has to take an hour. We know we have to all be in work or in cola or whatever. It's the same sort of thing. You're rushing around the whole time. You're rushing around. So because we're rushing around, we don't sit and think about us. Yeah.
So wouldn't it be better if we said less during davening and said more?
Of course it would. That's a gemara. It's better less with kavanah than not without kavanah. Of course.
So what's the gemara saying?
That's what gemara says. If you do less.
So I shouldn't try and read all of chakras.
It'd be better just to, if you could do it properly, just to because of shachar.
But if you
can do Baal Shaba, Ashrei, Yishtabach, and then the rest of it, you can't not do the brachas of Kriyat Shema, you can't not do Kriyat Shema, and you can't not do Shmona Esrei, and the rest you have to say as well. You can't not do those things. You understand what I'm saying? You can do less Tachanun, you can't do no Tachanun. Now, if you were to ask me, like, a not halachic question, like non-halachically, it's much better to do less than more. How much less? So, you know, if you ask around and say, just so spend 2 hours davening. No, none of us have the clock to spend 2 hours davening. You know, if you spend 2 hours davening after a week of 2 hours davening, it'll be too heavy for you. So you have to be honest with yourself. We're not living on that level of more. We can understand it. We can understand where we're going, but we're not living there. So we have to be honest with ourselves and take on part of our davening, an important part, which we're actually thinking cognitively about what we're doing. So generally speaking, the most important two parts of davening, the most important two parts, is Kriyat Shema and Shmona Esrei. Those Kriyat Shema is Deraisa, Shmona Esrei is a Machlokas, it's Deraisa, the concept is Deraisa, right? Tefillah is Deraisa. Those are two. Those are the like the pinnacles of Shmona Esrei, the pinnacles of davening, and certainly Mincha and Maariv. Shmona Esrei is the most important. Kriyat Shema and Maariv you have. Those are the places where you should, and there you actually do have time. I'm telling you, it's a big chesed that we have Chavaros Shatz. We have the returning of the Amida, right? And you know, Maariv, no one's rushing for food because you know it's not as good as Shacharis. No one's rushing. Maariv, for some reason, no one rushes. Everyone, you see, after the evening davening, no one's rushing. We're just chatting a little bit until they go down. So somehow, Maariv, we don't need the Chazaros Shas. Everyone has time, Maariv. So you can be Maariv. But the place you should be doing your avod, the simplest space, always work in the simplest place where you have the time. In those places. But that's where we should, and make one or two brachas alone, I say that. Make a bracha maybe. I mean, this is a little hard. I would say at the beginning, make one birkas like a shakel, right? Not the long brachas at the end. Make a shakel with kavanah. Make one shakel. You know what a shakel is? Shakel, niya, everything, the entire universe, niya came to being, bidvaro, with his words. We're saying that every time we eat a sweet, right? Or bamboo, or not bamboo. Yeah, bamboo. Every time we eat something, we make a shakal out of that. You know, I'm just telling you, the brachas were made, we make 100 brachas a day. Those brachas were made to build our emunah and our yirat shamayim. We don't, it doesn't build us, why? Because we don't use it properly. We've given such tools. They're amazing tools, what we've given. Davening is an amazing thing. You know, there's the kavanas of the Arizal. You know, there are people who do those kavanas of the Arizal. And I'm not saying they do it in a way that was really supposed to be done. It doesn't matter. You know how long it takes to daven shacharis?
4 hours.
Something like that. So they can't do it every day. No one can daven 4 hour shacharis every day. No one can do that. So they daven nates. Once a week, there's a minion. The davens, it's a nates minion. Daven says 6:30, and it finishes at 10:30.
There is
such a minion. And they do their kavanas, and there's the guys who go to it, they do it. You know, it's fine to have these things, right? Once a week on Friday, there's no kernel on Friday, you're a free man, get up for shot, get up, you know, go to sleep early Thursday night, right? get up for nades and have a 4-hour davening and be mishashay with a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So once a week, you actually have a Yom Kippur davening. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not saying for us, we don't know. You know, for us, it's a 2-hour davening, just knowing what the word's saying. Once, I would say once a month, right? Once a month, daven. That, you know what emunah that'll give you? You know what? You feel so close and so good that day that you're like, you know how you know if you're davening properly? How do you know if you're davening properly?
Do you like so in the moment? Do you like lose track of time?
A test. How do you know if you like the food? What do you do when you like food? Schnitzel. How many schnitzel do you guys have? No one has one schnitzel here. No one, right? There's always enough to have seconds here, right?
Yeah.
There's always the news here, right? So how many soy patties do you have, right? How many schnitzels do we have, right? No one has one schnitzel. There's always another one, right? There's always another one. If you like something, you always want seconds. If you daven, and you want to daven again, that's a sign you're davening properly. Okay?
Wow.
I didn't record anything yet. 5 minutes.
I have an hour, do you want it?
Yeah. Oh, then.